L'Ecouet Palestinien.
L'Ecouet Palestinien.
The Palestinian radio program from Montreal.
Every Monday from 11:30 a.m. to 12 o'clock p.m. Chaque lundi de 11h30 jusqu'à midi. Broken Palestine, the name of the Palestinian in Montreal.
كل اثنين من الساعة 11:30 صباحا إلى 12:00 ظهرا.
فلسطين is
free. Hi and welcome to Le Croix Palestinien, the Palestinian radio program from Montreal, and this is CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Joseph El-Mala, I'm the host for this program today, and Kendra Jayush is the technician for the program today. Our program for today has the speech of the Member of Parliament for the NDP, Sven Robinson, in Montreal at the PAJU, the Palestinian Jewish Unity Reception, at the Artitech Art Gallery last Friday, September the 14th, 2002. He spoke about his travel to Ramallah and the humiliations he met at the Israeli army's checkpoints. Also talked about the respect to UN resolutions and works of the PAJU, Ta'awush, and Gosh Shalom, and he referred to many of the groups that work for just peace and cooperation between the Jews and the Palestinians, similar to the PAJU in Montreal here, and the need to fight the corporate concentration of media in Canada, and he referred to the editorial one-sided policy of the Gazette of no criticism to Israel and ignoring the Palestinian side, unfortunately. And we also talked about the bombing of Gaza. Also referred to the speeches of the Prime Minister, Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, of course, and President George Bush last week. At the end, he outlined where to go from here, a plan of action to celebrate the coming of the Palestinian state. In his speech, he refers to Janet, Bruce, and Rizig, just for the information. Janet Winrath and Bruce Katz and Rizig Farage are executives of the PAJU, the Palestinian Jewish Unity of Montreal. Hope you enjoy the program.
That when I was invited by PAJU to come and speak, I thought, hey, this is a great opportunity for me to say to you, thank you. Thank you for your courage. Thank you for confronting, in some cases, the tremendous, tremendous wall of fear, of bigotry, of intolerance, in some cases of hatred. But you're there with dignity and with truth. That's very powerful. It's very, very powerful. I also wanted to just say something about my visit to the occupied territories and to Tel Aviv. Janet mentioned some of what took place there, but I've been asked sometimes, well, you know, what was it that led you to go there? Is this something you planned ahead of time? Well, I have to say, first of all, this wasn't the first time that I had visited the occupied territories. Some of you know I've traveled there on a number of occasions and taken a strong stand both in the House and outside on the rights of the Palestinian people. But really what it was for me on this occasion, I was in Geneva at the UN Commission on Human Rights as a member of a Canadian parliamentary delegation there. And I was so angered, so appalled, so disgusted, frankly, with the position that my government, the government of Canada, was taking at that commission. It was unbelievable. Just a couple of examples, because I'm not going to speak for a long time, but I want to share a few things with you. Because a lot of this you won't have heard about. At the UN Commission on Human Rights in April, Mary Robinson, who was then the UN High Commissioner on Human Rights, proposed that she travel to the occupied territories, to Israel as well, to see for herself the situation there in human rights violations. That sounds like a pretty reasonable suggestion, doesn't it, from the head of the Human Rights Commission. There were two countries out of the 53 member countries on the UN Human Rights Commission. There were two that said no. One was Guatemala, and some of you will know the history. You know, Israel used to supply the bloodthirsty regime in Guatemala with weapons, one of the only countries that was prepared to do that. One was Guatemala and the other was Canada. You know, a lot of people in this room, I suspect, don't even know that. Right? There were those two countries that said no. And what I saw, and there were other examples, but what I saw is that my country, Canada, instead of speaking out with an independent and strong voice for human rights, for democracy, for justice, my country, in fact, Canada, had become the mouthpiece for a country that had been kicked off the commission the previous year, and that was the United States. And that was shameful. That was shameful. And so I thought, look, if as one Canadian member of parliament, if I can take a stand and demonstrate, hopefully, to other Canadians and beyond, that there are many, many Canadians who don't agree with this position, who believe passionately that there must be justice and peace and end to the occupation. But that's an important responsibility. So only then, in Geneva, did I decide to travel. And it was an extraordinary experience, I must say. I went to Jerusalem. I met with a number of Palestinian leaders and activists there, including Hanan Ashrawi and others. I held a press conference there. And then I went to the checkpoint. I had to pass through a couple of checkpoints to get to the checkpoint at Ramallah. And I had actually been met in Tel Aviv at the airport by the Canadian ambassador. And he said to me, right away, he said, so what are your plans? I think he was a little nervous, you know, about my visit. What are your plans? Can't imagine why. I said, well, you know, I'm going to be meeting with some Palestinian leaders. I'm also going to be traveling within Israel, meeting with folks active in the peace movement and so on. And I hope also to meet with some of the leaders of the Palestinian Authority, including President Arafat. He said, well, have you asked for authorization from the Israeli government? And I said, well, no, I haven't, actually. He said, well, you might want to do that. And so I didn't pursue that particular conversation. But I thought about it, and then when I got to the checkpoint, and the previous day, actually, the Spanish foreign minister had been refused access, if you remember, and a number of others. And when I got to the checkpoint, I thought, and there was international media there, I thought, I have an opportunity here as a member of parliament to take a stand. Right? Yes, it was a symbolic stand. I was under no illusions that I was suddenly going to be able to change the Israeli government policy. But it's a chance to take a stand and make a position. So when the Israeli soldiers, who by that point had been joined by several more tanks, when they asked me, as you saw the video, you might recall, when they asked me where my permission was to travel into Ramallah, I just looked them right in the eye and said, I don't have to ask you for permission, this is Palestinian land, and you have no right to be here. By saying that, and then by shortly afterwards, as you recall, walking across the line as far as I could until I was stopped, I was asserting, I think, a very important value on behalf of many, many Canadians. And that is that every square inch of land that was seized in 1967 must be returned to the Palestinian people. Every square centimeter. And you know, there have been resolution after resolution after resolution by the United Nations on this subject, and you all know that. In fact, I want to read a couple words to you. These words might ring a bell with some of you. All the world now faces a test, and the United Nations a difficult and defining moment. Are Security Council resolutions to be honored and enforced, or cast aside without consequence? Will the United Nations serve the purpose of its founding, or will it be irrelevant? Right now, those resolutions are being unilaterally subverted. Who said that? That was George Bush yesterday. I wish the United States government called for respect of UN resolutions on the Palestinians as much as they call for respect for resolutions on Iraq. The hypocrisy of these guys is breathtaking, right? This sudden profound concern about UN resolutions, right? This terrible concern about the possibility of weapons of mass destruction. Well, you know something? UN resolutions have made it very clear that there must be regional disarmament. There's only one country in that region that we know for sure has weapons of mass destruction, as Mordecai Vanunu bravely pointed out. That's Israel. Right? And yet I haven't heard George Bush saying, get rid of those weapons of mass destruction. Right? So let's have some equity. Let's have some fairness and some consistency, it seems to me, in these policies. Janet mentioned the delegation that traveled earlier, the parliamentary delegation, and I really want to pay tribute to them. I think they did an extraordinary job. It was a very eloquent report. It was an all-party committee. My colleague, Libby Davies, Carolyn Parrish, who chaired it, who's done a superb job. La députée Francine Lalonde, qui a été une excellente porte-parole pour les droits des Palestiniens. And I also tonight want to pay tribute to a Montrealer that sometimes doesn't get enough credit, who long before I had the privilege of speaking out, was speaking out with courage and with eloquence to his personal political cost sometimes, I'll tell you. And that's Marcel Prudhomme.
Yeah.
I never did quite understand why he went to that other place there in all the Senate, but Marcel really a long, long time ago from the very beginning has spoken out, and I think we have to acknowledge and really pay tribute to the work that that Marcel has done. I was talking with some folks earlier from Ramallah and here in the crowd tonight, and they were talking about how some family members said to go from, I think, Ramallah to Bethlehem had to pass through something like 8 checkpoints, you know? And if there's anything that I saw that really struck me once again, I've seen it before, of course, it was, in fact, the humiliation that people are subjected to in their daily lives, just day after day. I watched at the checkpoint this kind of harassment, and some of you will know that that Desmond Tutu has spoken out particularly eloquently on this, and I wanted to just share with you some of the words that you may not have heard. Here's what Tutu said. He said, "I have seen the humiliation of the Palestinians at roadblocks. It reminded me of what happened to us in South Africa, where they battered us and heckled us and they took joy in humiliating us. My heart aches. Have my Jewish friends forgotten their own history? Have they turned their backs on their own profound religious traditions? Somehow, the Israeli government is placed on a pedestal where to criticize them is to be immediately dubbed as anti-Semitic. And don't I know it? Let me tell you, after I returned, it was, for me, just in human terms, it was incredibly painful and destructive to see the kinds of attacks that were made, because, and everyone in this room knows what I'm talking about, you know, I have defended Israel's right to exist and to thrive and flourish as long as I've been involved in public life. My family, as some of you know, was part of the underground railway in Denmark that helped Jews to flee from the Holocaust. I don't need any lessons on anti-Semitism. I've fought it all my life. But it is an attempt to silence those of us who disagree with the policies of Sharon we must reject in the strongest possible term. And of course, if you're Jewish, it's a little harder to accuse you of being an anti-Semite. So what do you, well, you know it all, you're a self-hating Jew, right? Self-hating Jew. You're either anti-Semitic or a self-hating Jew. Well, I want to tell you, we've got to reject those labels and instead recognize that it is entirely legitimate and indeed honorable to speak out. I want to pay special tribute tonight to Gush Shalom. Gush Shalom, who have come under serious attack within Israel. In fact, they've been accused of treason. Why? Because they have advised the Israeli Defense Forces that if they continue their destructive policies, that they may in fact be responsible for war crimes, for crimes against humanity. And for that, the head of the Israeli military has said that they are traitors and should be charged. So, you know, when people speak of courage on the part of those of us that have had the privilege of being able to stand up, I want to pay tribute to the incredible courage of the peace activists working, whether it's in Gush Shalom, whether it's the reservists who are refusing to serve in the occupied territories because they say they have seen for themselves in many cases inhumanity, whether it's Yesh Gevul, whether it's Ta'ayush, another excellent group, Ta'ayush. I don't know if the two women that were traveling across Canada had the opportunity of speaking here in Montreal. Some of you heard them. Very powerful. Very powerful. And I met with Ta'ayush activists as well in Tel Aviv. And to hear the work that they're doing was, for me, really an inspiration. And I think that in many respects, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that Paju is very much like Ta'ayush, bringing together Palestinians, Jews, saying that we have a common humanity, and let's work together on that. I mean, the kind of work that Ta'ayush does, organizing nonviolent direct challenges to the Israeli occupation, dismantling roadblocks that besiege Palestinian villages, telling soldiers to leave their checkpoints and return to Israel, gathering blood for Palestinians wounded by Israeli attacks, building water infrastructure in villages. Extraordinary work, tremendously important work. And again, if there are heroes, these folks are heroes for me. And I think we have to really respect that. You don't hear an awful lot about this. I want to say a couple of words about, I think, one of the greatest barriers that faces us to getting the truth out, and that is the control in the media. And our democracy is at risk, no question about it, with the increasing corporate concentration, the convergence, the silencing that's going on in the media. It is profoundly dangerous to democracy. And we know all too well what this means. Right here in Montreal, take a look at what's happening with the Montreal Gazette, with these national editorials that Izzy Asper is imposing right across the country. I mean, this is dangerous. Dangerous in a democracy. Michael Goldblum left, right? Publisher of the Gazette. Many brave journalists within the Gazette have spoken out. William Marsden, journalist of the Montreal Gazette, said this. He said, and I quote, "They do not want any criticism of Israel. We do not run in our newspaper op-ed pieces that express criticism of Israel and what it's doing." Period. Full stop. Right? And we know what happens to people that define that. Alexander Norris, an excellent journalist at the Gazette, who's still there, I hope, did an interview in December of last year, and he spoke as well about some of the challenges that he faced, the story that gets spiked by the newspaper and so on. So this is the kind of thing that it seems to me we've got to overcome. Canadians are not frequently getting the truth, and it's been particularly bad since September 11th, obviously. The kind of distortion, the kind of attacks that we've seen on the Muslim and Arab communities, the vilification, the dehumanizing and so on, has just been tremendously destructive. The attempt to shut down the art exhibit, I spoke earlier about art, I think it was called The Lands Within Me, attempt to shut that down, just part of that broader effort to silence those who disagree. And it seems to me that in a democracy, we have got to fight back against that as strongly as we possibly can. And now we've got Sharon, who has never been committed. I mean, how can anybody in their right mind call this man a man of peace? What I heard Bush is the great man of peace. This is the author of Sabra and Shatila. This is a war criminal, for heaven's sake. And you've got to recognize that.
You are listening to the Palestinian radio program from CKUP 90.3 FM, and this is the speech of MP Sven Robinson in Montreal at the Pajou reception at the Architect Art Gallery last Friday, September the 14th. We'll continue with the speech.
In one of the most crowded residential areas anywhere in the Gaza Strip, a bomb that killed 15 people, 14 of them civilians, innocent civilians, 9 of them kids, right? One of them just a little baby, the other is 2 years old. 140 people injured. 140 people injured. You just drop a bomb on this crowded residential community, a house. And how did Sharon describe that particular operation? He said this. He said, this operation was, in my view, one of our biggest successes. And where is the humanity? Totally lacking. But we are Canadian. And I have to say, where was Canada after that bombing? The silence of our government, the silence of Bill Graham, our foreign minister, and the prime minister, was deafening. There hasn't been a word. And many other leaders spoke out. The foreign minister of Sweden, for example, Anna Lindh, condemned the airstrike. She said this is a crime against international law and morally unworthy of a democracy like Israel. Where's our government? Silent. Invisible. My only hope is that somewhere in the CDC archives, perhaps, there's an interview with Jean-Pierre, because lately, we seem to have discovered the interview. And good for Jean-Pierre, by the way. Good for speaking up. At last. I say better late than never, you know. If he wants a legacy, I will gladly work with him on that legacy. But seriously, I think we have to commend him for speaking the truth on that. But we'll see now. I want to see them walking the walk and not just talking the talk. This is a government that's cut foreign aid absolutely shamefully. I mean, when you've got Joe Clark standing up and saying, you know, you cut foreign aid too much. It's true, isn't it? They cut foreign aid, and so we're going to be watching very carefully in the upcoming budget. But violence, the death of innocent human beings, I mean, we condemn. You know, they say, well, have you spoken out against the suicide bombings? Of course, I've spoken out against the suicide bombings. Nothing, and I repeat, nothing can justify the murder of innocent people who are out at a pizzeria or playing pool or celebrating a high holy day. Nothing can justify that innocent, that loss of innocent lives. And we've been clear on that, but not just through Democrats and others have been clear, but Palestinian leaders have been clear. But you can't hear that often. Hanan Ashrawi and many other leaders signed an open declaration on this subject. And basically, she said this. She said, they said, suicide bombings deepen the hatred and widen the gap between the Palestinian and Israeli people. They destroy the possibility of a peaceful coexistence in two neighboring states. And they go on. So yes, I mean, all human life is precious to us. And at the same time, I think we have to be clear, though, that Ariel Sharon and those who support them and those who are pushing from the right to go even further, the Bibi Netanyahu's and so on, the thugs that are trying to drive Palestinians in some cases right out of the occupied territories. You know, when people grow up in that environment, an environment in which they feel no sense of hope whatsoever, in which they watch their homes being demolished as they see settlers building new houses. The number of settlements has doubled since Oslo, as I'm sure you know. In the last year and a half, there have been 45 new settlements. Right? Total contempt for international law. When these people see their families being murdered in cold blood, this is fertile soil. People feel no sense of hope. And so I say tonight that if anyone is responsible and must take responsibility for that environment that is so hateful and so lacking in hope, it's Sharon. And those policies are creating more people, tragically, who are prepared to give up their lives. You know? And who's the author of those policies? There are many who have made this point and made it eloquently. Gideon Levy, I'm sure many of you are familiar with Levy. Amir Ahas wrote not that long ago, anger has accumulated in every Palestinian heart over scarce water, over each demolished Palestinian house, over the daily humiliation of waiting for a travel permit from an Israeli officer. A small match can cause this anger to explode. And in the past year, it has. It has. And it will continue, it seems to me, to explode as well. Sharon, who has invited into his cabinet Effie Etam, who called for pushing the Palestinians out, who invited into his cabinet Uzi Landau, who said that we're not dealing here with human beings, we're dealing with beasts. You know, the dehumanization of people, right? Very destructive. So, I think the last thing that I want to talk about tonight is just something about where do we go from here? What is to be done, as they say? And I know there are people who have been working on this for many, many years. And I was so pleased to see Bezek and Bruce here tonight as the co-chairs. We worked together 15 years ago when we were candidates for my party. I'm hoping I'll be candidates again. but we have, it seems to me, not only to be critical as we are, and we must be, but I think we've also got to be clear about what it is that we want to achieve. And at the core, at the very core, has got to be that basic objective, overriding objective, of an end to the occupation, right? That's where it starts. Into the illegal settlements. Recognition of the fundamental right. Talk about UN resolutions. How many people remember 141? You know, the basic fundamental right of refugees to return or to be compensated. Right? We have to deal in a just manner with that. I know that Fajrou has been on the front lines of calling for that justice as well. And when we call for an end to the occupation, sometimes they say, well, but you know, Arafat, he had a great offer in 2000. Baraki, he gave him so much. Well, I hope we all know that's a lie, right? Because if you look at the maps, to the extent that there's anything known, because there's never anything put in writing, was it? But to the extent we know anything, you look at those maps and it's the little Bantustans, right? Here and there and Bantustans with Romans going through and security walls. That's not a nation. That's not a nation. And the Palestinian people shouldn't settle for anything less than a full and viable nation. Nothing less. How do we achieve this? Well, I think, is anything that I believe even more firmly now, is that the only hope for achieving this nation will be if we can convince the United States, right, the most powerful, the power, the superpower, now let's face it, within the framework of the United Nations, that there's got to be an international protection force. Right? There's got to be a body in there that goes in there and says to Israel, the Israeli government, you can't keep ignoring the rest of the world with impunity. You can't tell the United Nations, remember, when they said they wanted to investigate the horrors of Jenin. Tough luck, we're not going to let you in. And the United States supported that resolution. Has there been a real investigation by the United Nations of Jenin? No. So we need an international protection force. And somehow, when I raised this with our prime minister or the foreign minister, they say, well, yeah, that's fair. We can only do that if both sides agree. Right? That gives Sharon a perpetual veto. And we didn't take that position in other areas. We didn't take that position in Kosovo, for example, did we? You know? And we shouldn't take that position there. It seems to me that one of our essential demands must be, as Canadians, and Canada could play an important role in this, that there be an international protection force in there as soon as possible. Absolutely critical. And Arafat has called on Canada to play a role. I know that Bruce Cassidy spoke out, urging our government to accept this suggestion by Arafat. He said, you know, Canada could play an important role as a peace broker, but so far there's been nothing. We should be doing far more in terms of development aid, in terms of medical aid, and so on. The human situation on the ground is disastrous. 75% unemployment. 75% unemployment in the occupied territories. The level of hunger, particularly in Gaza. There was a study that was released just a few weeks ago. A study that demonstrated that the levels of hunger in Gaza among children were at exactly the same level of some of the poorest countries in the world. In fact, the same level as Nigeria, Somalia, and Bangladesh. Okay? Canada can play an important role in humanitarian aid, calling for an end to the obstruction of the United Nations, calling on Israel to immediately respect the 4th Geneva Convention. Again, international law. We have an obligation under that convention, an obligation as a signatory to the convention, to call for Israel to respect it. And finally, speaking out in the strongest possible terms against any extension of the so-called war on terrorism to the people of Iraq. We must say no to that. In the strongest possible terms. God knows that many people have suffered. It's the Iraqi people. And I've got no time for Saddam Hussein, but he's got suffering from the economic sanctions. The 500,000 children who died the last decade. The people who are suffering the after effects of depleted uranium. And I see my friend Amir Kadir here, Dr. Kadir, who has spoken out so eloquently on these issues. We traveled together to Iraq, and he will recall the pictures that we saw in the hospital in Basra, of the congenital deformities of children in the Basra area. Devastating. Huge numbers. The bombing that continues, the collateral damage, you know? And they say no one has any illusions about the brutality of Saddam Hussein. But again, the hypocrisy here is breathtaking. Who was it that supported Saddam Hussein in the 80s? With weapons. Who was it who was silent when Saddam Hussein gassed the Kurds at Halabja in 1988? It was the United States. Not a word. And now they're the great defenders of human rights and democracy. Doesn't make any sense. And again, Canada should be speaking out. We've heard from Scott Ritter, the former chief weapons inspector, from Dennis Halliday, from Hans von Sponeck, and so many others, that bombing would be a humanitarian disaster. I deeply fear that the decision has been made in the White House to go ahead. But at the very least, let us tonight call on our government to say in the strongest possible terms, no to any bombing of Iraq. Strongest. You give me a lot of hope. I mean, to see so many people here, to know that you're working for peace and for justice, it helps to keep me going. I want to thank those of you who took the time to send me a note, a letter, an email after my trip. That meant a lot to me. I got a little bit of flack then, as you recall. But each one of those letters really, really went to my heart. And it meant so much to me. It gave me strength to keep going. And I see tonight the folks that are keeping that flame alive. And I want you to know that at times, you sometimes think, my God, it's pretty tough, isn't it, to keep going. But we've got to remember that we can make a difference. In May of this year, I was in East Timor. I was in Dili, East Timor, for the birth of a nation. Just a couple of years before, the president of that nation was in jail, in prison, Shanana Usmao. José Ramos Horta, the foreign minister, was exiled from his own country. 200,000 Timorese had been murdered in cold blood, genocide, while the world, including Canada, stood by. And yet people didn't give up hope. There were people, and some of them in this room, who kept the flame going, supporting East Timor, to the point that that nation became the 191st nation. But you know something? I'm going to see Palestine becoming that independent, free nation, just as East Timor.